I've had a bit of a cold this week, so I'm hoping my voice is going to last. You may not be praying the same thing, but we'll see what we can do to get through. This time, when I came to Burlington East, Pastor Bruce had actually picked the sermon titles and hymns and all of that, and so I want to acknowledge his work. And sometimes, rather than changing it, I find it a little bit of a challenge to myself to try and think of where to go with this and what was he thinking. And also, I think it means that the minister also has to go listen to my sermon so he can figure out whether I preached something very heretical and sent the congregation in a direction he didn't intend to go. So I think it has that purpose as well. And if you really want to mess with your minister on his first week back, I think everybody should move up into the first five or six rows and be right in the front and surround him like a great cloud of witnesses. And when he's like wondering what's going on, you can tell him, oh, you got to listen to the sermon, because I'm sure he encourages you all to listen to the sermons if you're away. I was also thinking that, you know, then people can't sleep quite as easy because you can kind of elbow them. You could pass the plate. You make more money. You could pass the plate twice as fast and maybe pass it twice. You know, there's all kinds of benefits to sitting up front. But anyway, but seriously, when I read the words of this title of the sermon, "We Are Surrounded," I immediately knew which Bible passage that included. But my mind also wandered to the many other ways that we can feel surrounded. And I don't know if it's just me, but it just feels more and more like the world sometimes is closing in on us, that there's just so much that we are surrounded by. We're surrounded by technology, as everywhere there's a Wi-Fi signal, everywhere there's people taking pictures of us and following our every move. Feels sometimes like we're surrounded by bad news. Certainly in the last few years, I felt like there's this rise of hate and fear and fear of the unknown. And even though in this country we've had great success, I think, bringing people from all over the world to live together in peace, we still are hearing this fear-mongering. Sometimes we feel surrounded by things that are happening at work or at home, financial pressures, relational pressures. As I was going up the coast of Alaska, we were being reminded of the ecological challenges that we face, in some cases disasters, poverty, war, famine, disease. Sometimes it feels like we're surrounded by and called to pray for more things than we could ever pray for if we started now and didn't finish until the day we died. But it seems from our readings that we are also called to know that we are surrounded by something other than what the world would make us believe we are surrounded. And I wonder if we have lost a bit of that vision for what we are surrounded by. Because the writer of Hebrews is facing a crowd with many, many pressing concerns as well. And the more I read about the New Testament life, the more I'm in awe of the incredible lives of faith that the early Christians led. And sadly, persecution that is experienced by many today for their faith. In fact, that is named in the passage. He begins by reciting many of the stories that we hear as children, stories of great faith and triumph, and the Israelites passing through on dry land, but their persecutors being drowned. We hear of great stories of David and his conquering of nations, building a great kingdom, of Jonah, of all these people. But then, thank goodness, the writer also pointed out that there were many that were persecuted for their faith, that never realized the promises they thought they had, that suffered greatly. Because I think too often in the church we preach about triumphs and never about people who have struggled and lost the battles that they faced for one reason or another. And I know we're equally guilty of that in healthcare. We tell all of the stories of people that overcame diseases and were cured to the exclusion of those that came to us for treatment and died despite the best care possible. But those are not failures. And it's not a failure as a Christian to not overcome the battles and challenges that we face. But the early Christians, though, were not the only ones who have lost their vision and lost their vision for what God had done, such as in Psalm 80. The psalmist gives us a vision of how God's plan and providence for his people came to fruition. They were planted like a vine out of Egypt, and the question is asked, why have you broken down her hedges? And your version says wall. Hedges were meant for the protection of what was planted. They surrounded that which was young and growing and meant to prosper. That which was meant to be nurtured, cared for, and to prevent injury. Next week we will talk about walls and fortresses, which have more of a military image. But this week we're talking about what surrounds us to help sustain us. And the psalmist in this passage calls for restoration. And perhaps we need to look around and ask if we have allowed our hedges to be broken down. Hedges allow for growth. Hedges allowed for that which is beginning in us to grow to maturation. And I wonder if there are people or situations in your life that are stealing your fruit, that are stunting your growth, that are reaching out through the broken walls or hedges that were meant to protect and taking that which was meant for something else. Perhaps it's your energy or your time. Perhaps it's your financial resources. Perhaps it's just people allowing you not to rest and do what you need to do to grow. Or I think sometimes we forget to turn the sermon inward, as I do, and say, am I the person that is trampling down the hedges or breaking down the walls of someone else? Am I taking from someone else that which they need to sustain themselves? And I often, I think, ask this question as a parent too. Am I allowing my child enough room to grow? Am I keeping the right amount of protection around them so that they can grow well and strong and good and not be either too protected, because fences and hedges that are too strong or too high don't allow sunlight in and don't allow the growth. But fences that are too low allow our children to be exposed to things that might hurt them. So it's always a balancing act. In our New Testament reading, Jesus said, "We can discern the face of the sky and of the earth, but do not discern this time." I'd argue in modern times, we can't even discern the face of the sky. We cannot predict the weather, no matter how hard we try. And sometimes it's frustrating when I get up and I look and I say, 50% chance of rain. Not even 49 or 51, so I could know how to hedge my bets. It's 50% chance of rain. And Hebrews reminds us at the same time to to remember our past. Remember the stories of the saints and the Bible stories. But even with that, Jesus said our vision and our knowledge prevents us from being able to have a vision for the present. We have limited ability to see what is happening right here and right now. And as I look around at our political landscape, as I look around at the way we are in so much trouble in so many areas, I believe that we need to strengthen our vision for what is happening in the here and now. I spent the last 2 weeks in Alaska, and we had the incredible opportunity to go into Glacier Bay National Park. And just when you thought coming up the coast that the majesty and glory of God could not be more fully displayed than in the BC and Alaska coastlines, there was this just amazing park. It is home to the largest tidewater glacier in North America, at a breathtaking 3 miles long and 3 miles wide and 73 miles long, stretching back into Canada. At 350 feet high above the water and 600 feet below, you can hear it so slowly thundering down the mountain, creaking and groaning until it calves an iceberg right before your eyes, bursting showers of snow and power into the sea below. And the park ranger explained that each year the region can receive up to 100 feet of snow. Makes my snow digging out easy, particularly on the mountaintops. And each of those snowflakes increasingly compacts and moves down the mountain at inches per year, with the current face of the glacier estimated to be almost 1,000 years old. Many of the glaciers, due to their natural cycle or climate change, have receded from the waters. And as I was reflecting on the theme of great cloud of witnesses, the glacier became an image for me of what a great cloud of witnesses means to the church. If we embrace all the flakes in the church who have gone on before us, not just the people in the Old and New Testament, but our grandmothers and grandfathers and the generations before them, providing us all layers and layers of faith coming down out of the clouds to allow us to touch the tidewaters, to bring fresh water to the sea of humanity that is crying out for meaning. Perhaps that could be our vision for the future. That God would allow each and every one of us to contribute to that great journey down towards the tidewaters and allow us to be continually nourishing the salt tidewaters with our fresh water. I met an incredible woman who was going through an extremely difficult time. She was young, she was facing a long hospital stay, a long stay in recovery, and all she wanted to do was get home to support her family. And that was not going to be happening for quite some time. And her condition also meant she was in danger of going backwards, having another event. And she wept as she remembered her grandmother reading to her and singing songs of faith to her. And that was what was getting her through. And she had known her great-grandmother for just a short period of time in her life. And she said, "My great-grandmother passed on to my grandmother, who passed on to my mother, who passed on to me a faith that is helping me get through this very difficult experience." And she was concerned because every time she wept with the love of that and the joy and the sadness as well, the staff would get all concerned that she was crying. But it was part of who she was, and it was part of this great cloud of witnesses in her life that ran back generations and was sustaining her. The glacier is a symbol of God's perseverance. Just as the book of Hebrews calls us to run with perseverance. And even though there's a lot of days I think I'm just hobbling, not running with any kind of perseverance, the race that is before me, we keep going. We do not run alone. We may not always remember our past. We may not always have clarity to see what is happening now. And I think most people looking back on their lives would have never believed that they had arrived at this point by the route they came, both good events and bad events. After about a year before I moved houses from where I was living in Oakville, I decided to finish my closet, which was the length of the wall in my room. And the designer said, we'll design it so that half the closet will be for a man and half the closet will be for a woman. I said, uh-uh, I said, ain't no man going to live here. Make it all a woman's closet. And as most of you know, I got married last year. So we don't know, right? We never know what God is going to bring our way. The book of Hebrews must have realized the limited vision of God's people and recognized that our job must be to keep our eyes on Jesus. Keep our eyes on Jesus and what he has done for us on the cross. We have taken our eyes off Jesus sometimes and placed them on governments for our societal salvation. We have taken our eyes off of Jesus, the great physician, and looked to the medical system to cure what ails us. Instead of securing our eyes on Jesus, we look to police and video surveillance and then wonder why we have a gun problem. The book of Hebrews reminded God's people that even though God demonstrated his power down through the ages, there were also those that were persecuted, imprisoned, tortured, hoping like Daniel they would be freed, praying that they would be protected like the Israelites crossing over to dry land. And sometimes their prayers were not answered as they hoped. And yet the book of Hebrews gratefully includes them in the long list of people to remember. I don't know if you saw the articles in the news this week talking about the loneliness epidemic. Almost half of people describe themselves as chronically lonely without even one friend. Just a generation ago, people had five people that they could identify as good friends. And I work in healthcare, and no word of a lie, doctors are now writing on prescription pads things like, go to gardening club, meet with a friend once a week, go join a book club, take the subway twice a week and talk to somebody. Imagine if we remembered that we are like a great cloud of witnesses, one flaky moment at a time coming down the mountainside, joining together to bring the power of God's love to the waters below. If we have eyes to see it, God is surrounding us with a great cloud of witnesses. We are part of something so much greater than ourselves. The park ranger talking about the incredible surroundings that we were watching says we are reminded that this place puts us in our place of being a very small yet significant part of something much grander. The more we realize how very surrounded we are, the more that we can grow. May we each leave here knowing that we are surrounded. Amen. I would call upon the ushers to take up our morning offering.